Hi everyone, welcome to Rewatchable episode number 68, where we are going to be covering Avatar The Last Airbender episodes 5, The King of Omashu, and episode 6, Imprisoned. As always, our contact information is as follows. Our email address is rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. Our Twitter is @RE_watchable. And you can always comment on this post as the episode goes up on hyperbole.com. So hi, I'm Donya. I've been prompted and reminded to introduce myself because I'm terrible at that.
Actually really good that you did though, because I was listening to last week's and I was like, who is hosting this podcast? Because Donya, I didn't listen to the whatchamacallit pie show.
Okay. Pushing daisies,
that's what it's called.
It's okay. Call it the pie show. It's fine because there was a lot of pie.
And that kind of has a reference to Avatar 2.
Yeah, it's fine. I'm terrible at it. I'm like, I have to make sure to introduce everyone else on the episode. Make sure you remember, and then I like get halfway through an episode and realize, I forgot to introduce myself again. Every single time. So at least I did. This time, does everyone else want to introduce themselves? Because I know Ariana last week got mad because I didn't let her say her own name.
Yeah, when we were signing off. That was funny. I'm Karen.
I'm Michal.
I'm Brittany.
And we're all going to have fun.
Yay! Yes.
Let's go to Omashu, you guys.
Yeah, because I actually really love this episode a lot. So we've got our synopsis for episode 5, The King of Omashu, which is, this week, Aang takes Sokka and Katara to the Earth Kingdom town of Omashu, where they soon get arrested for rock sledding over a man's precious cabbages. The King of Omashu takes the three as prisoners and traps the brother and sister in ever-growing rock candy. Aang is forced to capture the flying key and get past a giant monkey. Why did I think monkey?
Where did that come from?
Oh, monkeys on the brain. A giant bunny before facing the king in a duel of rock versus air. Aang wins, and the king is revealed to be Aang's childhood friend, Bumi. Bumi tells Aang he must master all four elements before facing off against the Fire Nation. I think it's because I said key. I think I said key, and then I was like, monkey.
Monkey!
I'm not sure what Flopsy is supposed to be completely honest with you. It's like what he is in the rabbit hybrid sphere of Avatar is unclear to me.
Yeah, I mean, I guess he really isn't like a rabbit because he's kind of big, but he's rabbit-like.
Yes.
But it's the same with most of the animals on this show. Like,
actually, that was something I just noticed in this episode because, Momo is a lemur. Like, that's actually been established. They even said it in this episode, but, like, he has wings.
Yes.
Which was confusing.
Yeah, but if you look at all of the animals, they're all a cross of something and something else. And you'll see
almost
it more.
Almost
all of them. But you'll see it as, like, you're going through. Like, more and more, like, almost the vast majority of animals will be crossed with something. And it's always really, really cool to be like, oh my god, so that's what it would look like.
At some point over the course of this this rewatch, we're going to have about, like, a 45-minute discussion about turtle ducks. And just so stay tuned, that's going to happen.
Turtle ducks! Yes, it's going to be great. I really, really hope I'm on that episode. Yes, so Aang really, really, really likes being a kid and playing games. So we have had penguin sledding and now we've had rock sledding, but I guess rock sledding is infinitely more dangerous considering there are giant pointy spears. Yeah.
Also, it's a male shoot system.
Yeah.
And it's made out of rock. So
yeah.
He destroyed, like, half the town doing that.
Yeah, but then you think, he's a kid. He's not really gonna think about that stuff first. Like, he's not gonna think, oh dear, if I like derail this little cart thing I'm in, if I hit like a roof or something, I'm gonna cause so much mayhem and destruction. No, he's just thinking, ah, giant pointy spears, must get out of the way, let's go flying. You know,
consequences
it's,
are not Aang's
forte.
Concern for the most part.
It's, yeah.
But at the same time, like, the interesting thing about this world is that you can cause that kind of destruction. And if you have earthbenders around, it's not really a big deal.
Yeah. Let's just fix it all back up again.
Exactly.
Yeah. But I guess, I mean, it just keeps bringing back into focus the fact that he's a child. He's still a child. And it's just going to mean that as we see his growth going through, it's going to be more apparent. Because at the moment, he's still stuck in that mindset of he wants to get in as much fun as possible. Like, I don't think at this point it's really sunk in the gravity of what has happened to the world while he's been, you know, capsicled.
I get that reference. Actually, I kind of wonder if the opposite is true, that he really does understand the gravity of the situation, but like his defense mechanism is to kind of brush it off and be like, well, you know, let's just live life and have fun. And because I really do feel like from what we've seen so far, he kind of gets that, you know, all the people in the Air Temple died and the Fire Nation is basically taking over everything. I think he really does understand that, but it's just he's afraid and he's a kid and he doesn't know how else to act.
Yeah, I guess that kind of comes across as well. I mean, yeah. Poor Aang. I, like, really feel for him. Like, every time I'm, like, going back and watching these episodes, I'm just like, because I was a lot younger the first time I watched this, and like, I think I was, like, as this started airing, I was probably closer to Aang and Katara, or maybe I was closer to maybe Katara's age than I was to anyone else. And now I'm, like, I'm a lot older now. And I just kind of go back and all I think in my head is, he's a kid. He is so young. Whereas when I first started watching this, I would just be like, oh, well, they're my age. And it would be so cool to be able to go around and do that. Yeah.
Did the newbies like this episode at first? Because I like remember the first time I saw it and I didn't really like it. But it's actually, like, grown on me repeatedly, like, since I've, you know, the more I've watched it.
I liked it better humor-wise. Like, I really enjoyed the humor in it in, like, the past, in, like, this episode and the next episode. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's something that I should have been picking up on, but I thought they were pretty funny.
Yeah, the humor always catches me off guard just by how funny it is, because I don't expect to laugh at the jokes that are maybe meant for kids, but they're just really funny. I really enjoy it. I liked this episode a lot, actually. I think the one thing that sort of bothered me, and we'll probably get to this in a little bit, is that, like, the Earth King, it wasn't a surprise to me who it ended up being. That was, like, really obvious, and I felt like I just wanted that information to be established and out of the way, because it was like, really, you don't know who this guy is. Like, I don't know. It was really obvious to me. Other than that, I really liked the lessons that Aang ended up learning in this episode. I thought they were really important and like another step toward him hopefully eventually mastering all of the elements and really kind of coming into his own as the Avatar.
Yeah, I was kind of annoyed at the same thing as Karen, where, like, you know, we all as viewers kind of knew who the king was, but I was even more annoyed when Aang keeps saying, like, I need to master, like, in order to be the Avatar, I need to master all these elements. And basically this king, who used to be his best friend, was like, hey, I am the master of earthbending. See you later. I was like, yeah. You're just going to leave? Like, he's the master of earthbending. Why aren't you going to learn anything from him? I was so annoyed at that. I was like, oh, okay, great. You have a master right in front of you. You know who he is. See you later.
Yeah, I really want him to start learning the other elements, and they just keep kind of skating over that, and it's really frustrating.
I think, well, I mean, yes, I think that's definitely, like, a point and a reason. There is this, like, interesting, I don't know, like, spiritual idea in the world that, like, he has to do them in a certain order. So, like, first he has to do waterbending, and that's why they're going to the North Pole, and then, you know, and then it's, like, time for earthbending, so you can't do that out of order.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I mean, it's not really, like, a reason, but it's sort of the explanation. And, yeah, I mean, we kind of haven't hit the point. Like, this episode, I think, is the first one that kind of sets Aang sort of a different goal, like, gives you an idea of what his goal is going to be through the series. And then hopefully next week's episode, you know, episodes give us, like more structure to that. So I think these early episodes are a little bit, like, if they feel a little aimless, that's why. Like, we don't have, like, the series goal yet, you know? Like, it's like, oh, they're going to the North Pole, yay! And then it's, but, like, in the meantime, it's like, we'll just do all this other stuff first, you know?
Yeah, I kind of forgot that they're on, like, a mission to get to the, to get to the North Pole. Just, like, completely forgot about that.
Yeah, me too.
I guess it's, like, that kind of aimless thing with them a little bit, too, in the, I guess if he is, like, if we see it as him kind of maybe running away from his responsibilities a little bit because he wants to focus on the fact that he's still a kid and he can still do these things and hide in that. I mean, all of these detours are, like, his way of, like, being like, oh, hey, we're going past such and such a place. Let's go drop in there. And, oh, I used to know such and such person all of these years ago. I just want to see what it's like now. It's, like, just detours all the time. And I think when he starts, like, kind of focusing back again, it'll start picking up. There'll be, like, something that'll potentially act as a catalyst, I guess. And I mean, it's the way with a lot of stories, is there'll be that one pivotal moment that'll, like, be the switch, and then kind of focus it back on the goal again.
Yeah, and there's also the question right now of, like, what Aang is as the Avatar, right? Like, what's his role in this world? Like, there's this vague idea of, you know, these injustices happening, but, you know, for the most part, like, I guess one of the first times it was sort of touched on, I mean, I guess they touched on it a little bit in, what was it, The Warriors of Kyoshi, but, you know, when he's at Bumi's table and he's like, oh, yeah, I'm the Avatar, be peaceful and get along and, you know.
Yeah.
And, like, be peaceful, get along, and, you know, is basically, like, his job as far as we know right now. So, yeah, I think, yeah, I mean, again, like, these episodes kind of interest me in retrospect in how much they kind of make of the aimlessness, you know, because as the series goes on, there is a sense of, like Danya said, like, catalyst and momentum that really starts to build. But, like, I love that they take, like, they'll take time in this episode to do, like, a 2.5-minute joke. And I adore that, you know?
Yeah, I love the silly moments. I do. Like old man Aang.
Oh, that was brilliant.
I just love, like, everything about that moment. It just cracks me the hell up every single time I see this episode, because I'm just like, he's so obviously not an old man.
What was the name he chose, Danya?
Can you remind
us?
I knew someone would get me to try and say. I can't remember. Like, June was the one that, I know we've got it written down in here, but June is the one that Katara chose, but the The surname is Pippin Padaloxacopoulos. There we go.
Nice.
I hate you. Is this like some kind of revenge for me and Marima for just ganging up on you?
It's revenge for all the times everyone's ganged up on us. So, yeah.
Fine. Can you say it, Karen?
I can. Will I? No.
Well, then I guess we'll never know.
Oh, yeah. At least I kind of managed to say it without fumbling too much. At least I didn't put a monkey in there.
That would have been really random.
Yeah. But yeah, and we also get Cabbage Guy. Cabbage Guy through cabbage this whole episode. I love Cabbage Guy.
It felt so bad for him, though.
It would. You always feel bad for the little people. It's really,
like
really
it's like the one guy in SpongeBob who, whenever there's a catastrophe, you just hear, like, off in the distance, my leg. There's always someone in SpongeBob with their leg being injured.
Yes! Yeah.
I don't really understand Cabbage Man, but it's good that he's there. He's an important figure.
I don't think there's particularly anything to understand. I think it's like, it's one of those background character running jokes, and as you continue through the series, you'll see a few more of them, and it'll be pretty great. Like, I love Cabbage Man.
I'm a little worried for how much he loves his cabbages, though.
I love that you picked up on that.
Like, so that was a little much, I think.
There are people who cosplay as Cabbage Man.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
There are people who cosplay as, like, literally any character from this series.
Foaming at the Mouth guy has had cosplays as well.
Oh my. I really shouldn't be surprised at this point, but wow.
It's great. No, I love that people take the background characters, because those little bits is what, like, kind of makes Avatar so special. Because it's just like, everyone gets attached to even, like, the smallest characters. Like, they just love them. So, yeah. What did you guys think of Boomy?
Like, I loved Boomy. Not Kid Boomy. Kid Boomy freaked me out, but King Boomy was a little better.
I actually feel the opposite. Like, Kid Boomy was nuts, but, like, in a fun way, whereas King Boomy, until the end, like, I liked him in the end, but up until that point, like, he just made me really angry. And I think part of that was, like, I just wanted Aang to realize who he was, and I was like, come on already, but yeah, he was strange.
His jokes were so good.
Love his jokes.
Like, lettuce leaf? Oh my gosh. I had to pause it. It was so funny. I was dying. I thought it was the funniest thing ever. And then when he, like, comes down, he's like, do you like my new robes? I'm like, what? It was just so random.
That's what I love about this. It's like, not everything has to have, like, a purpose. You know, like, there's a sense of, like, fun to the show that, like, the people who are writing it are having fun. And, you know, it's like, let's just make this hilarious joke. Like, it's not going to come back. It's not important, but it's hilarious.
Yeah. Oh, I just, puns, guys. Puns. Any kind of pun-related jokes will literally have me in stitches. I could be laughing for, like, a good 30 minutes sometimes just about pun-based stuff. So punny. I love them. Oh, but, yeah, I guess his tasks... His tasks were a little bit out there, but I guess considering what we knew of him, and obviously as an audience, we knew that Kid Boomy and King, the Earth King, were like the same person. It wasn't so surprising, I guess, that his tasks were about as insane as he was. But yeah, I actually have written down here, getting the key was very American Ninja Warrior, which I get that reference because I actually watched that show. This isn't one of those, like, show references to something else that I don't get, which I did go back and watch the Lima thing.
Zabumafu?
Yeah, that thing.
I can't believe you guys were talking about Zabumafu.
What?
Seriously? Zabumafu?
It's so relevant. Wait. Did you not like that show?
No, it was so stupid.
Oh, my God. Whatever. Don't talk
like
to me anymore.
It was like a puppet lemur. What the hell?
It was amazing.
Also, it sounded like Zoom, and it always confused me, because I liked Zoom, but I didn't like Zabumafu.
I liked Zoom, too, actually. Anyway, American Ninja Warrior.
Yeah, no, that was me, because I was watching it again, and I was like, oh my god, he's, like, doing the leg thing, and, like, the climbing, and like, yeah, it was very much like that. I could, like, hear those stupid commentator guys in my head.
I actually really liked all of the tasks, because even though they seemed pointless, like, oh, go get the key, or oh, go get my giant bunny, like, the act behind them were really testing his skills, not only, like, his skills as an airbender and as, like, a fighter, but also his ability to think about the situation and maybe find a solution that doesn't seem as obvious at first, like, especially when you're looking at him getting the key, because he tries it a couple different ways and he realizes whatever he's doing is not working until he finds another solution that's a little bit outside of the box. And I really liked how, even though the king was completely insane, he did have a reason for doing all of this.
Yes. Bumi has reasons.
Bumi has all the reasons. But I really, I mean, I absolutely love the animation in the bit where he's like, he grabs the bit of rock and he throws it, and then he, like, cuts through the water with his airbending as well. Like, that, just that little sequence, that was so, so, so cool. And then when it kind of like goes into the wall, like it goes, and the key's hanging down, I just wanted him to bow and go, thanks for your consideration.
Aang was pissed in this episode. I liked it.
Angry Aang.
Yes.
So angry. I mean,
angry.
Yeah. Look, now we're making puns.
The first time, but not the last.
I love it. Absolutely love it. I want to use that. Oh, fantastic. I just really love puns, guys. But yeah, I really, really like that. And I love the giant bunny, because I like that he was like chasing around the little baby bunny and he's like, oh, Flopsy, come back. And it's just like this giant bunny chasing him around because he's going, Flopsy, Flopsy.
And then the giant bunny was so nice and it climbed up the wall and it flopped over on its back and he rubbed its belly and it was really cute.
Yeah, I personally thought that the little bunny was more of a challenge than the large bunny.
Yeah, because that little bunny was quick and it could get into little tiny places and it just was really difficult to catch. So, yeah, that would have been more of a challenge, but I still really, really like the design on the giant bunny as well. Even though it's, like, really, really weird, but I think it's really, really cool. And then, obviously, his final task being the battle at the end, and Aang thinks he's being super clever because the other two fighters look really intimidating and strong and young. And he's like, oh, well, the Earth King has stood right in the middle, so I'm going to go for him. He doesn't look so tough.
Oh, man. Then he rips off his shirt, and he's, like, totally jacked. I knew he was going to pick him, And I knew that it wouldn't be an easy fight, but I did not expect that to happen. And that was another one of those lessons that I really liked that he learned in this episode, was that, like, never underestimate your enemy. Like, Bumi didn't, he seemed insane, like he would be no challenge, and Aang thought he was being pretty clever, and in the end, he ended up fighting, like, one of the best earthbenders there is, and it was just really cool how, you know, not only did Aang do that, like, he ended up beating him, or at least coming to some sort of, like, conclusion with the fight, so that was pretty cool.
I guess I was thinking it was more a stalemate at the end of anything.
Yeah, because I was thinking, like, it made the whole episode make sense. Because the whole episode, I'm thinking, like, how can these people let this guy be their king? Like, I just don't get it. Yes, he's hilarious. But how on earth could they have let this happen and, like, function normally as a, like, a society? But then it made a lot more sense in the end.
I don't know. All I'm thinking, and I don't know how many people will get it, is the fact that Boris Johnson is like an MP, or he's trying to be an MP in London, and he's basically just like the biggest joke. And I don't understand sometimes how he got into any kind of politics or power, but he's a complete jokester. But then you kind of stop and look at sometimes at what he stands for, and you kind of go, you forget how serious people can be because they put on this front of just being a big jokester. So I guess, like, someone in our political climate is a massive jokester, and just never underestimate them. Never underestimate the jokester.
Are you talking about real life now, are you?
Yeah, real life. There is
a, why I didn't understand.
If you guys have never had the fortune to come into contact with British politician Boris Johnson, go to YouTube and look that up. Yeah, I promise it'll amuse. You'll probably be a little scared for our politics, but you'll be amused for about 5 seconds. But yeah, so we kind of move on then, and he's like, given his full mission, he's going on to the North Pole, and he kind of gives the order as well at the end of this episode of The Elements, like, going back to what was said earlier, like, he gives the order of the cycle for in which order they need to be learned in. So yeah, he's got his mission now. So North Pole, here we come.
Yeah, earthbending was also, just as a side note, really interesting to see, because this was like our first real look at what it can do. And I think that, like, I, going into the series, I was like, oh, earthbending's going to be, like, really lame, I think. But it was actually pretty interesting and can be very dangerous, as we saw during their battle.
Yeah. I really liked it because it wasn't just about, like, brute strength with them throwing rocks around. I mean, that's a lot of it. But, like, the way in which he melted into the earth and, like, would pop up in other places was just really cool, and I love that there are, like, different sides to it, that you can do different things with it.
There's a lot of finesse to earthbending that I really like, and there are also a lot of interesting themes about it that and about earthbending that are introduced in this episode too, that come back later. And I love the philosophy of the bending. You know, I love that it's not something that just happens. It's not something that, like, you can just be, like, super strong and you'll be a great bender. It's really dependent on, like, just as much mentality as like, form. And, yeah, I really love that, and I love how it was. Yeah, it's also that melting into the floor thing was so, like, unexpected, and, you know, because it had been such a, like, a brutal competition in a way.
Yeah.
And then he was just, like, you know,
the look on Aang's face was really funny.
It was really great. I love earthbending a lot, and I mean, there's probably more surprises with it coming up, so look forward to that, because I think even with a lot of the different elements, you'll probably
find something surprising about each of them, like something you weren't expecting, but when it happens, you'll kind of go, oh yeah, that makes sense, that that could work. So yeah, just, yeah, keep an eye out for it, because I'm always continuously impressed with what they do with it, with all of the different elements. Did you guys miss Zuko and Iroh?
No.
No?
Not really. I mean, maybe Iroh a little bit because he's funny, but yeah, it was kind of nice to just have him focus on something else for this episode.
I always miss Iroh. I guess. I mean, I don't know. I don't really know if I miss them. I mean, I dig Zuko's story from the previous episode, but I feel like you do need to, like, Zuko's very intense. Like, he's very one note at this point, and it's, I think you need some breaks from that, because otherwise it would be just the same thing, you know,
a teenager.
Yeah.
You dig it.
Because it's an upsetting episode. I think this episode is going to be titled Pun Bending.
Yeah.
Oh, well, it is now.
What was everyone's favorite scenes from this episode? Do you want to go? Is it Michal? Is that how it's?
Yes. Yeah? I'll go first. I love the mail chute sledding through Omashu, because it was just, it was so, like, it was such a long sequence, and it, like, you know, so many funny, like, silly, ridiculous things happened, and, you know, like, just unexpected little, like, comedic moments. And it wasn't, like, I mean, it wasn't important in a plot way, but it was important in a like, oh god, I love this show kind of way, you know.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was I think overall my favorite scene. Also, like, I like Adult Boomy, but he really does kind of creep me out, so I was like, yeah.
Karen?
Mine was when Momo was being too fat to get through the hole, because I just really connected with him in that moment. I know what it's like to eat so much that you go into, like, a food coma, and you're so fat that you just can't get up. So, yeah, I really understood him in that moment.
I love you so much. Never change, ever. I love you. So for me, my favorite scene was at the end where Aang and Boomy go mail chute sledding, and then you just get my cabbage every time. Just love it. But I like that even though Boomy was, like, older and clearly has all of this responsibility of protecting this city and being a king and all of that, he still has those moments to let loose and relive what would have been, a childhood friendship cut short. And, I mean, being able to reunite with someone who would have been one of your best friends and literally has not changed, like, looks the same as he did the last time you saw him. I think I think it's just a really nice moment to relive that. Brittany?
Oh, me. I loved the king's jokes. I really did. All of them. I was rolling. I thought it was the funniest thing ever. Yeah. I don't know why. Maybe I was just, like, delusional and on cold medicine, but they were so funny. at the table, and then, like, when he changes, I think the robes one was my favorite, where I know I said it before, but where he's just like, what do you think of my new robes? I absolutely loved it. And the king kind of reminded me, including the, like, rock sledding, I just figured it out while someone else was talking, like, the king reminds me of what the genie looks like in Aladdin at the beginning when he's selling his, like, wares and, like, before he sings.
Oh!
And then the rock sliding, like, it reminded me of, like, when Aladdin gets the lamp and like the rock turns into like a big slide. There's just a lot of Aladdin in here for me.
Yeah. Oh, he does. Now that you've mentioned that.
There was actually, I had like a Hercules flashback at one point. I think it was this episode because he goes down in one of those like carts and through the building where the guy's like painting his little like a vase or whatever you call it.
Oh yeah, and he just crashes through.
And he crashes into it and he was like, sorry. And that's kind of what happened in Hercules too with like the discus and stuff like that. So. Yeah.
And speaking of Hercules, it's actually a vase.
Oh, yes. Sorry.
Thank you for saying that so I didn't have to.
No problem.
Yeah. So, favorite lines, which is always lots and lots of fun. Michal?
Mine was just the conversation between the guard and Bumi about the bed chambers. So it was like, my liege, do you mean the good chamber or the bad chamber? The newly refurbished chamber. Guard, wait, which one are we talking about? King Bumi, the one that used to be the bad chamber until the recent refurbishing, that is. Of course, we've been calling it the new chamber, but we should really number them. Take them to the new, to the refurbished chamber that was once bad. And I just, you know what? It's like that happens in real life, right? Like if you do renovations in your house or something, like you're used to calling that a room something. And then it's like, wait, but the identity of this room is, I don't know, whatever. It was just hilarious. Hilarious to me. I don't know why.
I like the little bit at the end was the bit that got me, was take them to the refurbished chamber that was once bad. That just the way that he said it, that's the bit that cracks me up. Karen, what was your favorite line?
Mine was when the guards had all three of them and they were discussing what they had been doing to get arrested to the king, and at the end the one guard just goes, and malicious destruction of cabbages. And I was just like,
listen, Karen, cabbages are serious business,
okay? Apparently.
Mine was the king, one of King Bumi's puns. So when he's talking to them and asking like where they're from, and Aang says he's from Kangaroo Island. And he goes, oh, Kangaroo Island, eh? I hear that place is really hopping. Every time, good 5 minutes, laughing.
Just notice pumped. None of the guards laugh. But don't you laugh.
Yeah, but it's hilarious. And just, yeah. It's okay, King Bumi, we think you're funny. Brittany, what was yours?
Oh, another thing that happened in these episodes that was my favorite, kind of goes along with the jokes, is when, like, someone says a joke and then there's just, like, a cough because no one's responding. It's, like, so subtle, but it's off in the distance. They'll, like, make a joke and then it's, like, and, like, no one says anything. And that happens in one of my favorite lines from this week is when Katara's, like, they're trying to guess the name of Bumi for, like, the final task. And, oh my gosh, I'm totally blanking on his name because I don't have it in front of me.
Sokka.
Okay, Sokka. Sokka goes, Rocky, you know, because of all the rocks. And then there's just like that distant cough. And then Katara's like, we're going to keep trying, but that's a good backup.
I love how earnest she was there. She was honestly trying to make him feel better. Like, we're going to keep trying, but that is a good effort.
Well done. Thanks for playing. Cool. So then we move on to episode 6 and everything gets more serious business. So Imprisoned is the title of this episode. And this week the trio spot a fleeing earthbender named Haru, who's from a town where all earthbenders are rounded up by Fire Nation gods. The exposition continues as Haru saves an old man from a collapsing mine. The old man returns the favor by turning Haru into an all-metal boat prison camp. Katara gets herself arrested by fake earthbending using Aang's airbending. On the Earthbender metal ship, the warden throws ship captains overboard and orders anyone sleeping to be woken up to find the mole. Katara tries to rally up the Earthbenders, but the motivational speech doesn't do its job. Night falls as Sokka and Aang come to rescue Katara. She refuses to leave, allowing Sokka to devise a plan to get the coal burning in the ship's bowels up to the Earthbenders, if only metal bending were a thing. Haru's father rallies up the troops, sending Captain Hikaru and crew overboard. So, obviously we spoke a little bit about what Aang's kind of burgeoning interest in Katara. Katara started showing interest in Haru in this episode. So, do you think that was down to just her seeing a kindred spirit in him, being what, like, the last bender of, like, that town, or the last person left behind at that town? Or do you think it was actually more than that? Do you think she's starting to, like, look at guys now that she's out of her own village, which didn't really necessarily have a lot of people around her own age, like, starting to notice people and have those kinds of feelings as teenage girls do?
I mean, Haru is cute. Like, I'll say it.
It's because he's pretty.
I'll say it. He was good looking. So I wouldn't be surprised if it was that. But yeah, I mean, I think that anyone who struggles with their bending abilities, I think she's going to feel a connection to, because she's still learning as well. And she doesn't understand not wanting to stand up for yourself and fight, because that's all that she's been preparing to do for so long in her village. They were always, you know, we saw Sokka training those little kids, so when the Fire Nation came, they would be ready. And she doesn't understand just sitting there and giving up and hiding what you can do when you have the ability to fight. So I think she really wanted to help him.
Yeah, I don't think that they're necessarily, well, maybe in Sokka's case a few episodes back, it might have been more of a romantic thing, but I think it's more of an admiration of skills at this point, and they're finally seeing people their own age out and about and doing the same things that they are, so they're sort of just drawn to them, because Sokka had that immediate attraction to the warriors, and she's now finding benders, and she's kind of over Aang's showiness, and she's more into the people who are trying to master their skills for the sake of understanding what their mission is with their skills. So I don't know. I didn't really see anything as like a love interest per se, but I think it's more of a like a common thread interest. Like, you're bound to people who are after the same things as you are.
Do you think that's something we'll continue seeing more of?
Yeah, I hope so. I think that type of relationship is much more interesting than your face is cute interesting, like, relationship. Nothing against their faces being cute, but yeah. I think that I find, like, those relationships more interesting.
I mean, I feel the same. I like seeing them come into contact with people who are fiercely protective and want to do good and want to fight back. And I think it's something they need to see as well, as this other generation of benders, like, wanting to make a change and make a difference. And knowing that, like, they've given up when they've only just started on their journey to kind of bring back hope and actually fight back, you know, that I think it's frustrating knowing that, you know, they're putting in so much effort to change things, and they don't want to see people, like, stepping back and just giving up completely. But obviously in this instance, I think as a balance, Haru has a real reason for not wanting to use earthbending, because he's left alone with his mother, and his father's been taken away because he was an earthbender. He used his powers, and the Fire Nation
are like secluding them off somewhere where they can't use their earthbending. And, you know, his mother's already lost her husband and his father. And to abandon her and leave her behind with no one, I mean, that would be really difficult. So he has a very compelling reason to want to not use his powers and stay behind. But then, obviously, Katara has that kind of empowering kind of speech and use your powers for good thing. And it just, it backfires a little bit. But I guess no one would have been expecting that. What do you think?
I love that that's what happens. I mean, I love that, you know, that's what kind of the Fire Nation has done to this town. I mean, not that it's not the guy's fault, because it is, but like, they've created this atmosphere where, you know, I mean, they've done like a great conquering job, because they've turned the people against each other, you know, and everybody's kind of working for themselves. And that's how you divide people. And that's what Katara, I think, is most upset by. And, you know, that's what she's working to go against with all of her speeches and things and the Hopi stuff. She's also, I think she's also attracted to people who she senses need her, who, you know, she senses like a loss or an abandonment in them. And I think that that's something that is attractive to Katara for a few reasons. But aside from, you know, Pretty Face and Earthbender or whatever, I think that's part of why she's interested in Haru.
Were you guys expecting the old man caught in the mine to, like, hand Haru over?
I knew he was going to get caught for earthbending, but I didn't think it would be at the, like, cost, like, the old man turning him in. I thought, like, maybe someone was, you know, in behind a tree or something like that. I had a feeling that he was definitely going to get caught, but the old man, come on.
Yeah, I was thinking the exact same thing, actually, that he was going to get caught, because that was obviously how the plot was going to move forward, but not that the old man was going to do it. But, you know, I think I kind of don't blame him, because he's terrified. And yes, this kid saved his life, but, you know, like you were saying before, they've turned everybody against everyone else in this town, and he was just looking out for himself and probably his own family and hoping that there would be some sort of reward for turning in Haru. So I can't really be mad at the old man for doing what he did.
I mean, in that respect, do you think, I mean, obviously it's not really established in a way, but do you think that there was something in place that meant that if you were harboring that kind of secret, that there was also some kind of punishment? Maybe not the going on to the metal kind of prison, but, you know, if you were found to have been harboring an earthbender or keeping an earthbender's secret, do you think there would have also been a punishment for that?
Well, I don't think so, only because Haru's mother wasn't taken away, and she must, like, they must have suspected that she knew he was an earthbender and she was keeping him a secret. So I think that maybe there was some sort of reward for turning him in, and maybe, like, they would kind of, the fire people would maybe leave the old man alone for the rest of his life, and he can kind of, like, live without worry in that way. But I don't necessarily think that there would be any punishment, although we don't see what would have happened to Haru's mother later on. They only took him, and it was a couple hours later that Katara's master earthbending plan went into action. So,
I don't understand how they didn't see, like, even now, even rewatching, I don't understand how they didn't see through the really shoddy earthbending attempt. Like, great plan. Fantastic plan for, like, trying to make it look like she was earthbending, though their kind of fake argument acting.
Well, maybe the, like, guards, like, that's work one of my on favorite commission. Things. Like, their pay is commission-based, so they're like, oh, she earthbended, I guess we get paid for this.
I mean, obviously they weren't too bright, because they thought that Momo was earthbending.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
not that surprised.
Yeah.
That was hilarious.
Yeah, it was really fun. I love that so much. Momo is so funny. Yeah, I don't know, but you could, obviously from an animation standpoint, like where the air is animated, it's visible. But I guess that in terms of like the show, if you were living in the show, you wouldn't see that.
Yeah.
Because obviously it's air. You don't see that. But I think in terms of the animation to kind of illustrate their point, they had to do it that way. Because otherwise, how are you going to know what it's hitting, what it's moving, that sort of thing. So I guess it's something you could also forget in terms of the art style a little bit, because obviously in show, they're not going to see that.
They're also, and this is a theme that I think is very interesting, nobody knows how the heck they're supposed to fight airbenders, because there haven't been airbenders for 100 years. So, yeah. Like, I actually have never thought about that. Like, oh, the air is actually invisible, which, like, just strikes me as suddenly completely terrifying, like, fighting these guys. And, like, you literally can't see what they're doing. They're, like, waving their arms around, and you get socked with, like, a wall of air. That's it.
Yeah.
So airbending just got a lot scarier. Actually, and given this week's episode of Legend of Korra, which I don't know if anybody on this podcast...
Oh, yes. Yes, yeah. I do. Oh my god.
Airbending's got some darker potential there, I think. Yeah.
Yeah.
No spoilers, but just gonna say that.
I read the recap, so I know. Oh, what you happened. Okay. I had to edit it. What am I not supposed to do my job?
You could have just gone, "Hey Danya, I don't want to get spoilers for such and such. Can you cover this for me?"
I'm pretty sure you were sleeping.
That's true. Time zones. So they then go over to the prison bit. So Katara's taken away for her earth bending. And we get there and we meet the warden, and the warden just needs to talk for forever because it's George Takei.
I knew it sounded familiar and I couldn't place it, so I'm glad. Oh. I now know.
Yeah. I was looking at, like, his character's face, and I was like, oh my god, he looks like Shang Tsung. And I was like, please, please let it be him. Please, please, please. And I looked it up, and it was George Takei, which is pretty awesome, not gonna lie. But I was really disappointed it wasn't Shang Tsung.
No, it's not Shang Tsung. I'm sorry. I know how much you love Mortal Kombat.
I know.
I love Mortal Kombat, too, though. It's so good. But yes. I love his voice so much. Like, even when he's not an animated character, whenever he just, like, does anything, like, any kind of talk or any speech, or he's in any show or film, anytime George Takei is on screen, animated or not, I literally go completely silent. Because I just have to listen. That's just, it's just rule of my life. If George Takei is speaking, shut up. But yeah, so we get another Katara inspiring moment. So what did you guys think of her speech?
I thought it was amazing, actually, and she brought up a lot of really great points, and I was surprised that nobody decided to do anything, but I was pleasantly surprised because I like that it wasn't easy, that she didn't just make this pretty speech and everyone decided to follow her, that it was more realistic. They were really afraid for their lives, probably their families' lives, and they didn't think they could do anything about it, so they ignored her. And, you know, not everything can be solved by a good speech sometimes, and they showed that here, and I wasn't expecting them to, so it was nice.
Yeah, I agree with Karen. I was pleasantly surprised that no one got up and did anything after the speech, because during the speech, you're like, yeah, go girl. And then it's just like dead silence. People are like looking at their bowls and stuff.
I was a little like annoyed at Katara almost, like, not obviously. I mean, it's good to try and help these people like free themselves from a prison. But at the same time, I was a little bit like, you know, she's just walking in there and going like, hey, so how are you going to like escape? And it's like, Katara, these people have been living under the Fire Nation for like years, and
they're like, right, like they're like, we're just trying to survive here, like please let us live and don't get us in trouble. And I was a little bit like, and you're coming in here with your, you know, you've been here for 2 days and you think you know everything about this place. I mean, obviously it all worked out for the best, but like, I did like that they were like, oh, you know what our big goal is? Not dying.
You know? Yes. Yeah. That actually annoyed me too. And I was like, I get where you're coming from, but you need to have a little bit more sympathy for these people.
Yeah, she has such an like an idealistic kind of view of what she wants from people, I think. Like, she expects people to behave a certain way when they're up against, like, oppression, I guess. Because she's, I guess she expects from them the same that she expects from herself. And when it's not happening, she's like, well, I've got to make it happen. But it kind of... For me, the speech was nice. It felt a little preachy, though, for me, for my liking.
She's preachy. I mean, that's one of Katara's character traits. She's not good at, like, I mean, she's bossy, you know? Like, that's just kind of how she rolls sometimes. And that's fine. Like, that's a legitimate character trait. And it's good that it worked out here. But I like that they also kind of illustrated that, you know, this could actually... really get her in trouble. And I mean, for as much as she and Haru are, you know, we're kind of commiserating over like living under like the thumb of the Fire Nation and losing people to them, you know, the Water Tribe situation has been very different. You know, I mean, I'm not going to say which one is better or worse, because like living under the oppression of the Fire Nation versus like your village having been like decimated by the Fire Nation but they're not on top of you, like I'm not going to say which one is harder, but it's like not having them in your daily life is very different, you know, from living around these people.
Yeah.
And I actually really liked how they brought up this side of Katara in this episode, because I'm not even kidding. Before I started watching these two episodes today, I was like thinking about the three of them, about Sokka, Aang, and Katara. And I was like, with Sokka and Aang, you really know what their faults are. I mean, it's pretty obvious that Aang, you know, tends to be a little silly and he doesn't always take things seriously. And Sokka, you know, he either wants to just like run away, or he's misogynistic, or, you know, he doesn't always believe in people. And I was like, Katara at this point has been kind of perfect. And I really wanted to know what her fault was. And I was like, I hope she doesn't stay perfect. I hope she really has some lessons that she needs to learn as well. And in this episode, they did exactly that. And I was like, wow, this, yeah. When you kind of start to think that, and then the show immediately follows up with the answer, I think that's really good storytelling and really good writing.
Yeah, I think the perfection up until this point is kind of building it up to her. I guess she's a little bit holier than thou sometimes. Like, she kind of sees herself and her ideals as being a lot higher than everyone else. Because she kind of thinks that this is the way the world should be. And what, yeah. I don't know. I have so many conflicting feelings about Katara. But then I love that they don't shy away from the fact that any of them have flaws. Because they're human and they're still quite young and... they should have flaws. Like, every single character should. None of them should be perfect. And I like that they highlight it now. And that it has the potential to kind of go on. And this could still... because she doesn't necessarily learn from it in this episode. Because in the end, they still get the she still gets the resolution that she wants out of being on that ship or in the prison. And so it's not a lesson she's learned yet about herself. So it still has the potential to cause damage further down the line.
So yeah, I think that Sokka and Aang are not the best people to teach her that lesson as of right now, because they're sort of still bending to her every whim in a way. Like, they kind of hold off against her plans at first, but they eventually just go along with them. So I think that she needs someone to that influence to really get to her yet, and we haven't seen it.
Bending to her every whim.
Oh gosh. We were getting way too serious.
I know, we were.
It's funny because it's funny that we're getting so much out of this, because this is like probably one of my least favorite episodes of the series, and it's interesting that we're kind of talking about serious stuff with it.
Yeah, it's funny because I felt like I was on the last two episodes, the last episode of the podcast where we discussed the last two episodes of the show, and I was like, we were being pretty silly about it, and it was hard to kind of like bring it down and actually analyze the show, and which is fine because this is obviously a kid's show and you're supposed to have fun with it and it's supposed to be funny and cute. But I was like, you know, are we going to get to episodes where like we can actually do the podcast and analyze things and get deep about it? And here we are doing that. And I think that's really cool. And it kind of goes into our next point because like Sokka is one of the characters that, in, you know, the first episode or so, I was like, whatever, he's not important. He might actually be, like, one of my favorite characters, which is really weird because he doesn't do a whole lot. I think the story is really about, like, Aang and Katara, and Sokka's sort of in the background. Like, he has his purpose and everything, but it's not, he's not necessarily on the same level that the other two are. I mean, right now, obviously, I don't know what the rest of the show is going to be like. But the way, like, he was planning things in this episode and just everything that he's doing, I really enjoy him as a character. I think he's a really good balance between the silly and the serious in a way that maybe, like, you know, Katara tends to be a bit too serious and Aang tends to be a bit too silly. And I actually find it a little strange, but Sokka is a really good balance of those two.
I love Sokka.
I do as well. And I think this episode was a really good episode to highlight his strengths because we get to see more of Katara's flaws. So it's nice that it kind of moves the focus around so much in that sometimes we'll learn more about one character and their failings and how they can stumble, but then in the same breath we're getting the strengths and everything of a different character, because seeing someone else's flaws just highlights those things even more. And I think him kind of taking charge of a situation like that, where he comes up with that kind of plan, which in the hands of someone else could have gone really wrong. Like, that the whole situation could have turned out really bad for everyone, but in his hands it just went like perfectly, pretty much, because that's where his strengths are.
And I like that, like, Sokka doesn't overplan. You know, he wasn't like this. It was a complicated plan, but like his part, that, you know, when they came and got Katara and they were like, okay, it didn't work, let's get out of here, it was like, that's realistic. It's like, okay, we gave this a shot, it's not worth risking anymore. And yeah. You know.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I completely agree. Like, he leaves enough, I guess, wiggle room in his plans that you can work some stuff on the fly as well. Like, if something doesn't go quite right, there's like an exit route, or there's enough leeway for someone else to go, well, if that didn't work, how about we try this super quick? And, you know, it kind of really, really works that he plans, but he doesn't plan too much, which I really like. I love Sokka so much. I think he's great. But, yeah, I guess from there, they all escape. And then we get a little glimpse of Zuko. I missed him so. I missed him.
He hasn't grown on me yet.
It's okay.
Oh, thank you, guys.
I think no pressure. I don't expect anything. Just, I mean, like, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Like,
obviously, I'm holding out.
He's
holding
the main character on the show, so like, obviously, he's gonna get more development. But like, if I were you guys, I wouldn't be like, oh, I'm looking for this, I'm looking for that. Just, it'll happen. Don't worry.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's the same for any character. No one's going to have the same favorite characters. Like, it's there's going to be something in it, everyone, for all different people. Like, there are going to be people who prefer, like, I don't know, Cabbage Guy over any of the main characters. What? It's true.
I know it's true. That's why I'm laughing.
But, you know, there's no pressure to like one character over another. You connect with who you connect with. And, I mean, I...
What does it say that I'm connecting the most with King Boomy right now?
It says that you've seen 6 episodes of the show.
Yeah. Good answer.
Very good answer.
But, yeah, I mean... Yeah, for people who are going back and rewatching, see, like, going, like, an episode or two without Zuko is really hard. But, you know, as you're, like, right at the start of the series still, and you've got so much still to go, I mean, you don't have that connection with him, and that's fine. You should find that and go through it and go through his development, like, step by step. It would be really difficult to, like, get that connection if you know too much. So it's completely fine if you don't like him right now. I mean, there hasn't been enough development of him. At the moment, he's still a petulant teenager stamping around wanting his own way because he wants to prove himself to his dad and go home, you know? I mean, that's that. At this point, that is what we've got. That's who Zuko is. So in 6 episodes, it's still a very, very shallow, very one-dimensional kind of thing, so it's completely fine to not have that connection with him yet, because there's not really a lot to connect with. There we go. but
you know what he did connect with? Katara's necklace.
I was about to say that, like, Katara, obviously she notices her necklace is gone, and then in the next breath we see Zuko picking it up. Who put in the Zutara comment?
That was not me. Who was that?
Who? Mitch, I think.
Is that Mitch?
Oh, Mitch.
Is Mitch a super fan?
Yeah.
Okay, that would explain it. Okay. So, yeah, I just wanted to know who was outing themselves as the Zutara fan.
I ship it.
Yes. Yeah. I will also.
Oh my god! I can't believe this.
I will also admit to I ship it as well. What am I gonna say?
I feel like there's like this elephant in the room that us newbies like can't see, but you guys are like, we really shouldn't be having this conversation right now, and it's very awkward.
Yeah. There's an elephant koi in the room, okay, and it's even worse. Those things are clearly water-based mammals, so having one in the room is terrible. So I think there will be more thoughts about this as time goes on, but I will say that the first time I watched this, that, like, you know how you have some things that just make you, like, unexpected things at the end of an episode usually that will make you go, well, this made me go, and now it made me go, all right.
Yeah. Oh, I'm looking forward to seeing this moving on. But so now I want to know the super fans who ships what, but I'm not. Okay, no, we're going to move on. Let's move really quickly on to favorite scenes, where I'll just get mine over with, like, super quick, because it is literally just whatever the warden was talking. That's it. He didn't even have to be doing anything. He just needed to stand there and talk, and I didn't even really care what he was saying. It just sounded good. So, Mikhail?
Favorite lines? Where
favorite
are we?
Scenes.
Oh, favorite scenes. Yeah, the last scene where Zuko finds Katara's mother's necklace. Because, I mean, I guess a runner-up would be the scene where they meet Haru's mother, and they're like talking about what's going on in the thing, and like they're all like, "Oh, act natural," and, like, they look ridiculous. Yeah. And then, like, that scene gets really dark because they're, like, clearly being, you know, extorted by the guard. And, you know, so I like that combination. But, yeah, my favorite scene is definitely, like, the necklace, because I have in feelings.
Reasons.
Yeah.
There are reasons. But we'll move on. Go, Karen, go.
Mine was the fight between the earthbenders and the firebenders at the end, because I actually got goosebumps from that, which is really weird. I never expected an animated children's show to give me goosebumps during a fight scene. So that was strange, but I really liked it.
It's great, isn't it? I was like rewatching it. I was like, that's a really cool fight. Like the way they use the coal and just like they clearly know what they're doing.
Yeah, and the fact that they finally stood up for themselves and finally, like, I don't want to say they finally took pride in what they can do, but they had been so beaten and broken that they kind of forgot about that pride. And when they finally took it back and took everything into their own hands, it was just, it was a really great moment.
Agreed.
Ooh. Yeah. And then Brittany?
Mine was when they were doing, like, the obviously rehearsed dialogue to like create a fake fight so that she could use her airbending, and then Aang's just sitting behind a rock like trying to catch a butterfly. He's like, yeah, I know my cue, and then he misses it. Yeah, I liked that part. Oh,
you had one job, Aang. Okay, favorite lines. So for me, it was the stupid soldier pointing at Momo going, "That lemur, it's earthbending." Every single time. Yes, it's an earthbending lemur. Congratulations. Your powers of perception they're amazing. Clearly, you should be running the Fire Nation army. Well done, dude. Michal?
I had a serious one, but I'm going to change it to the funny one, which is that where George Takei was like threw the guy overboard, and then it was like, "Bring me the captain." And then they were like, "You just threw the captain overboard." and then later they were talking about like the buffalo, or before that, I don't remember, whatever. And he goes like, "Which was it, a buffalo or a bison?" And it's like, I don't know. Cause like, what is, I mean, technically we call him a flying bison, Appa, but like, what is he? I don't know. He flies. He has six legs. This is a difficult issue.
I love that line, by the way, because it's like this, for them it's like, oh, this is such an important thing that we need to know, where really it doesn't actually make that much of a difference to the whole situation. But yeah. I just love that. Karen?
I was actually struggling between the one that you chose and the one I ended up going with, so I'm glad you chose that one, because I was like, it was so good with that lemur, it's earthbending. It was hilarious. But the one that I ended up choosing was from Haru's father, and he just goes, after they throw all the Fire Nation guys into the water, and the one says, "Oh, I can't swim." And he just goes, "Don't worry, I hear cowards float." And I'm like, yes, fist pumping the air.
Very badass. It was. Do you know, funnily enough, Karen, that was my other choice.
Danya! Brain twins.
Yeah, don't tell Marima. It's fine. Brittany?
I liked in the opening scene where they're like, they're always, these people are always hungry. They just need to start like hoarding some food from somewhere. But Sokka comes back with his little like bounty, and he's like, "We've got a few options. First, round nuts and some kind of oval shaped nuts and some rock shaped nuts that might just be rocks. Dig in." And there's like, he couldn't find any food, so they're just like trying to eat whatever's around, and he just brings back rocks because he just doesn't know anymore. I could just imagine him out there being like, "One nut, two nuts, rock," like just so depressed because he's always hungry.
Yeah. Oh, Sokka.
I guess I made that funny line more sad than it needed to be.
Yeah. But that's kind of how this works. It's like, oh, unexpected feelings where there were no feelings before. Let's really quickly go over some of the listener feedback, which if you do want to give us feedback, I'll go over the contact information really quickly again. So you can either drop us an email at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. You can at reply us on Twitter at @RE_watchable, or you can leave us a comment on the post for this episode on hyperbole.com. Alternatively, iTunes reviews. We check all of these, and we'll just kind of pick out the ones that are the most relevant. So for this week, we have something from Hyperbole from Anne, who, considering we've been making quite a lot of Harry Potter references, she thought that we might be interested in knowing, if anyone didn't already, that basically she goes, here's a fun fact that you guys might want to talk about at some point in the show. Commander Zhao was voiced by Jason Isaacs, aka Lucius Malfoy. Thought you guys might be interested considering all the Harry Potter references made in both shows. So
that's amazing.
I didn't know that. I knew that, and I was gonna say it, but I was episode last week.
So there we go. For anyone who didn't know, now you do. The other little bit is obviously we spoke a little bit about all the different kinds of bending types, like looking like a martial art. And I know that I mentioned that the videos are like, the videos were like an extra behind the scenes thing where they actually went through everything. But again, they have spoilers in there, so we won't actually really go into that until we're a little bit further in. But Dreamer very, very nicely left a comment to actually let us know which kind of style of martial art every single one is based off. So they put, the waterbending is based off Tai Chi. Earthbending is based on, I think it's Hyunga style Kung Fu. Sorry for any terrible, terrible pronunciations. Firebending is based on Northern Shaolin Kung Fu. And airbending is based on, oh my god, Bagua circle walking.
I think it's Bagua.
There we go. But then again, and they also confirmed there are videos on YouTube, but they have small spoilers through part of season one. So maybe a little bit later on in the season, I can link some of the newbies to it after I've rewatched it, just to make sure it doesn't really spoil anything for anyone. Because it's the videos are really fascinating. And then we also had an at reply on Twitter. For anyone who was on our Pushing Daisies rewatch, I think it's ERALC03, because I don't know how that's supposed to be pronounced, just says, binge listening to rewatchable Pushing Daisies episodes. So, yay! That's so cool that someone's like literally just going to go through all of those and catch up. I hope you're going to be... they're obviously not going to be on this episode, or they're not going to hear this unless they do decide to pick up Avatar or rewatch Avatar. But I really hope that you enjoyed it, like, a lot, and that you come back and listen to Avatar, because you should also have Avatar in your life if you don't already. And the last little bit, I don't know, Brittany, do you want to take this one?
Oh, yeah. I just wanted to say hi to David, who I met in Orlando last week. I met a real live listener, guys, and he listened to us all the time. He's listened to all of them, so he'll probably be listening to this one. Hello, David.
Oh, hi, David. That's cool.
Yeah. And, yeah, it's cool to always to meet your listeners in real life, but
I'm sure it must be. It's never happened to me.
Oh, it's happened to me, but that'll probably be a story for another time. So, talk to you later then, guys. I'm Danya.
I'm Mikhail.
I'm Karen.
And I'm Brittany.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.